Okay, let's start the top of Nun Hamada Aleph, 2, 4, 5 lines down. Shalach Rav Huna bar Avi. Yisrael shalakach sadeh me'oved kochavim. Person who purchases, a Jew who's purchasing a property from an oved kochavim. Uva Yisrael acher ve'chazik ba. Now the Jew comes and grabs it. Ein motzin ota miyado. We don't take it away from him. Everybody agrees to this principle. It's the principle that Shmuel laid out for us yesterday, which is that once the transaction has begun and the monies have exchanged hands, the field does not enter the second Jew's hand until there's a shtar in place, whereas the goy gives up or disowns or lets go of his ownership somehow before that point in time. So there's this interim period in which the other Jew can come in and take it, and if he does take it, we do not remove from his hand. Amar Rabbo, Hanei Tlat Mile, Ishtar Le Ukvan Bar Nechemya, Reish Galuta Mishmei De Shmuel. These three items that we're going to see in a second, the three items that are told over, that Ukvan Bar Nechemya told me when he was Reish Galuta, the name of Shmuel. Dina De Machuta Dina. The first principle is Dina De Machuta Dina, which we saw yesterday, is the principle of Shmuel, that the law of the land dictates. And when it comes to the law of the land, according to at least the Rashbam, that means that there's a social contract, that the people accept the rules of the king, and they agree by living there, they're going to accept those rules of the king. Now, the next two, as the Rashbam notes this as well, but the next two really are, according to the Rashbam, subcategories of Dina Machus Dina, but there's still three independent items. The next one is Versipta de Parsai Ad Mem Shanim. That the Arisuta of a Parsai, the Persian, right, land chazaka is 40 years. Now, there's two ways to learn what this means, right, depending on which way you learn, will actually indicate whether it's really a din and din and a machus din or not. So, the first way that the Rashbam learns it is that even though, in general, people do not acquire property through a shtar, nevertheless, if a person or a non-Jew stays on the land for 40 years, that's enough to generate a chazakah. So we said that before. If you remember, when a Jew purchases land from a non-Jew, who supposedly purchased it from a Jew. So you have Reuven, who owned a piece of land. Tony came along and purchased the land from Reuven. And then Shimon tries to buy it from Tony. Now, Shimon's been on the land for 3 years. And he claims he purchased it from Tony, who purchased it from Reuven. But we have no evidence about Tony's claim. Why? Because there's no shtar to Tony's purchasing it from Reuven. So what would we do in a normal case if Tony was a Jew, meaning that it was Reuven, Levi, and then Shimon? We'd say as long as he lived there for one day, then it's a good, right? There's a good taina there. As long as the Jew, the interim Jew, lived there for a day, it's a good taina because of the chazakot that can be established. A Jew can establish a chazakah. If you remember in the Gemara said that a non-Jew cannot establish a chazakah. The din of chazakah does not apply. And therefore, Shimon, who purchased it from Tony, is no better than Tony. And that means if he's no better than Tony, he cannot establish a chazakah. The Jew who purchased it from a non-Jew, who purchased from a Jew, cannot establish a chazakah in place of a shtar. And that is only true, right? That's what the first interpretation of the Rashbam brings. That's only true if the non-Jew has not been there for 40 years. But if the non-Jew has been there for 40 years, then a Jew who purchases it from him has no problems. The other Jew can't come back and claim, listen, he stole it from me. Because 40 years is considered to be a sufficient chazakah. And that's the chazakah that's established over here is through that 40-year period. The second interpretation that the Rashbam brings down is that even though in other places Jews establish chazakah over 3 years, that's not true in Persia. And Eretz Paras, it actually has to be for 40 years, and that's Dina de Machusahu. That's the Dina de Machusa. The Dina de Machusa is that you can't establish a Chazakah in 3 years, you can only establish it over 40 years. And that's the second interpretation he brings. Now, based on the Girsa, there's different Girsos here, but if you say Arisa de Parsai, Aris is a sharecropper, right, that works on the land. So, according to the way the Girsa reads here, which is it's Arisa de Parsai, it's actually the second interpretation of the Rashbam makes a lot more sense. Because then, if up to 40 years, someone would be an aris on the property. If at the standard time period in which an aris is 40 years, then you can understand why if you hold it for more than 40 years or over 40 years, then you have a chazakah on the property. Because now you're no longer an aris, right? You've extended your ownership, meaning that you've so demonstrated ownership beyond the point that a normal aris would be. According to the first interpretation of the Rashbam, that it's simply that a non-Jew can establish a chazakah in 40 years, right? I don't know why the term aris is used over here. I mean, that doesn't make so much sense. The Rabbeinu Gershom actually has a different girsa, which is, if you look at the top, in the top right, the Rabbeinu Gershom says, arishta de parasai. Right? So that, if you say what arishta instead of arisa, then you can say chazaka shel parsim. Then you could talk about it, because then you're not talking about arisa sharecropper, you're talking about arishta, right? That the, I don't know what those are, contracts or the lands of the parsim are over 40 years. That would make sense then according to the first interpretation of the Rashbam. So it might have to do with the girsa itself, right, would, or Arishan, or Arishta, would make a difference in which interpretation that you use over here.
Arishta is more in term of...
Chazaka, or...
And not in
term
of Arisha, to take possession of the land.
Right, Arista, Arishan, it seems to be like a chazaka, or some sort of contractual ownership over the land. Ownership over the land, versus the term Aris, which would be a sharecropper, which would fit better according to the second interpretation of the Rashbam, I don't think as well as the first. So if you have the other girsa, it might be that that works better with the first interpretation of the Rashbam. Okay, the next din of Shmuel is, Bahane Zaharure, de Zavin Arolataska, Zvine Zvine. So these Zaharure are these, are what we call the rich kids, right? They are people who inherited land, meaning that they're wealthy. These wealthy individuals go ahead and they buy land from the tax collectors. Now the tax collectors are confiscating the property because of the lack of payment of taxes. There was a land tax. The land tax is imposed. And if you don't pay the land tax, they then foreclose on the land and they take it in payment, in lieu of payment of the taxes. So then the tax collectors resell the land in order to raise the money for the taxes. And then these rich people will go ahead and buy the land. Now, when these rich people buy the land, is that a proper sale? And that's what Shmuel says. It is a proper sale. When they buy it, you can't go back to them and say, that's my land that was stolen by the tax collector. It wasn't stolen by the tax collector. The tax collectors took it rightfully because you owe taxes and you didn't pay it. Now, the Gemara qualifies this statement. It says, V'hane mila de taska. That's only true when we're talking about the land tax. Aval kargolo. When it comes to the head tax, no. So when it comes to a land tax, the land itself is encumbered, or the lien from the tax collectors is on the land, and therefore when he confiscates the land, he rightfully does so. Whereas when it comes to karga, when it comes to the head tax, the Gemara says, my time, karga akarkaf de gavri manach. That is an obligation of the individual. The individual is obligated and encumbered to pay it, but the land is not necessarily encumbered to pay for the land. So therefore when they confiscated the land, they did it inappropriately. So from the braid of Yeshua Amar, Afilu Sari de Kado Mishtabde de Kargo. Right, so even the even metaltalim is basically what he's saying, but even the barley in the barrels is Meshubad the Kargo. In that it should be even more so, and it makes more sense even to say such a thing, which is that fine, when it comes to land tax, the land itself is what's obligated or is the item that is encumbered to pay the tax. When it comes to head tax, the individual is Meshubad. The individual is Meshubad, that means that him and all of his property are Meshubad to pay the tax. So that's exactly what Rav Huna Brei Yeshua is saying, is that when it comes to head tax, your entire possessions are at risk in terms of paying for the head tax. So according to Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua, then even if it was collected for the head tax, you would still have to, right, or that he took the land for the head tax, that would still be a valid confiscation. If it's a valid confiscation, he sells it, it's not a problem. So Amar Rav Ashi, Amar Lei Huna Bar Natan, Kashi Ba Meimar. Rav Meimar had difficulty with this position, right, of Rav Huna of the Rebbe of Shua. Why? It says, Im Kain Batalto Yerushat Benoa Bechor. Right, so he says, then you will never have Yerushat Bechor. Why? Davile Ra'ui, Ve'ena Bechor Notel Bera'ui Kemuchzak. Right, so this is a principle in Yerusha. Principle is Yerusha that when you have a number of children, a number of male children, the Bechor, right, the oldest, if he was the Reshit Ono, if he was the firstborn, right, the male child was the firstborn of this father, then he's entitled to a double portion in the land. So how do we do that? You have, for instance, four brothers. So the four brothers, and one of them is a Bechor. So instead of dividing the property up into four, you divide the property up into five. Divide the property into five, the Bechor takes two of those five, and the other three take their single portion in the property. That's only true when the property exists and is in possession of the estate at the time of the death of the father. So anything that's there, present, and ready to be taken and divided, that's where the Bechor gets a double portion. But when there is a Yerusha, what is called Ra'ui, that will fall to them. For instance, there's monies that were owed, or there was a grandfather, for instance, that the father predeceased his father, and now there's a grandfather with property. When the grandfather passes away, the property will also fall to the children. When that property falls, right, that is what's called ra'ui. It's not there at the time the death of the father, and therefore the bechor becomes like a regular child or a regular, regular divider of the property. So that's called when you're muhzak, if you own the property, it's there, available at the time of the death, that the bechor gets a double portion. When it's ra'ui, when it is only will become in the future, or it was available at the time of the estate, but it wasn't in the possession of those individuals, that the bechor does not have a double portion in. So now what is he suggesting? What Rav Ashi saying is that that Hunar Banata told him that a Maimar had a problem with this was because now if your property is encumbered to pay the taxation, which is what right Rav Huna Breit Rav Yeshua is suggesting over here, that when you have a head tax, all your property is Meshubad, right, to pay the tax. If all your property is Meshubad to pay the tax, then the way the I'll tell you how the Rashbam formulates it, because it's the only way that's going to become a problem, is that the Shibud HaMelech, right, is Adif. Mishar Shibudim. It's better than any other encumberment. I mean, he has the first right, first lien on the property. Same thing as the tax. And in the U.S. it works that way with the IRS. I'm sure it works here with the tax authorities. The tax authorities have the first right to any claim on the property. So the king has the first Shibud, and his Shibud is so strong, it's kegavui dami. It's as if it was already collected. So meaning that if all your property is encumbered and you haven't paid the taxes already, it's as if the king owns all your property. The king owns your property, then when a person passes away, there is no Yerusha anymore because it's in the possession of the king. Once you've paid the tax, so say the children go ahead and pay the tax, now all the property returns to the estate. But it returns to the estate after the death of the father. If it returns to the estate after the death of the father, that's already ra'ui. And therefore the bechor will not get a double portion in this field. Well, we don't know. We don't know what that is. And since we don't know what it is, it's the entirety of his possessions are encumbered
so
into that.
It would be for the father to say, this corner of my field or this otsar is set aside.
Right. So that's the answer. Truthfully, the Rashbam says exactly what you're like saying to me. It's that the question's not so good. Question could be true. You're right. In this case, Bechor will not get double portion. The pasuk will apply in some unique case, like what you're describing, in a case where it isn't a problem. You're right. But in this instance, in this circumstance, and where Dina Machusadina is this way, you're right, it wouldn't apply. That could have been the answer of the Gemara. The Gemara does not answer that way. The Gemara gives a different answer. But in Hochanami, the Ashram points out, like you're saying, that you could have answered that, right, that this isn't the case where Bechor will get a double portion. There will be other cases where Bechor will get a double portion. If you just look at the top Tosfos, just to reinforce the point, the top Tosfos says, the Bishlam will be called Adam, Sheesh Lav Ktubat, Ishao, Bachov, Afal Pisha, Nechasim, Shemudim Lahem. If you have any other creditor on the estate, even though there's a Shibud over there, Mikomakom, Ein Yerusha, Bnei Bechor, Betela. So why on there don't we say that the Bechor also loses out in those cases? Because why? They have a Shibud, they have a Shibud on all those properties. Why isn't that the case? So, when it comes to a creditor or a woman who's going to come to Ktubat, Mechusere Guvaina. They lack collection rights. Why? They have to go to Beis Din. They have to get a document of collection. They have to do a auction on the property. They have to go through a process of Beis Din in order to allow for their collection. That's not true when it comes to taxes. Even a large tract of land that's worth much more than taxes is mishubad. And in truth, the land really belongs to the king in that sense. It's as if the king owns it already, and there's no mechusere guvaina. There's no lack of collection rights over here. Now, this might be hinting at another idea, which is dina de machusadina, right? We said that the Rashbam explains dina de machusadina as being, what? As a social contract, the acceptance of the authority of the king. Or to live in this kingdom, that's what you accept. The other possibility is that, in general, the king owns all the land. Now that's a machlokes, because if you believe Dina Machusadina applies that way, then it may not be true in Eretz Yisrael, it may not be true of Malchi Yisrael. But, that's what the Ran in the Dorim discussed that, if you remember when we did this in the Dorim. But, right, so we will, right, without going too deep into the sugi, I'm just pointing out that Tosfos seems to say over here, right, that Akarkaot Ikar Hein Shel HaMelech. That statement of Tosfos might be an indication of how he feels about Dina de Machusadina. which is that the reason that dinam yechutz v'dinam works is because the king really owns all the property. If the king owns all the property and you're meshubah to pay the taxes, then basically he's basically got your property right now, because if you don't pay taxes, you don't own property in this land. You fail to live up to the standards of dinam yechutz v'dinam, and who owns the property? The king. The king owns the property, right? There's nothing to talk about. But you see from the Rashbam and both the Tosos that the lien, or taxation lien, is much stronger and different than a normal lien on the property. And because of that, it's considered as if you've lost the entirety of the property. There is, I think today, in modern day issues with Yerusha, I think that in England, they have such a concept that, as opposed to other places where the Yerusha passes to the children based on the instructions of the individual, unless there is no instructions. If there are no instructions, then the state becomes the executor of the estate. They place that in England, I think, for instance, when an individual passes away, the state automatically becomes the executor of the estate. So it automatically reverts to the state. In that case, right, again, if that's the case, there would be no, right, it would all be ra'oi k'muchzak. And number two is, there'll be no problem of distributing Yerusha, because the person's not being oker the din d'oraisa when they give Yerusha, because it reverts to the state, and the state is the decider of where all the property goes, not the individuals. But when things like that happen, you will eliminate the bechor having the ability to take a double portion. So based on that question, he says, I have a problem with Rav Huna saying that everything is encumbered to the head tax. He says, well, wait a minute. If you're so, you know, bothered by this, by the head tax, why aren't you bothered by this, by the property tax? And the property tax should bother you the same way. If the property tax, fine, you can't encumber all your possessions, but the property tax applies to all land. So all land, what are you going to do? The Bechor gets no double portion and lands here. What are you going to say? He paid his taxes and then he died. If you pay the taxes, there's no encumberment of the government. Also over here, he paid the head tax and then he dies. So meaning that once he's paid the tax, the government has no lien on the property. Now, whether the Gemara here means that he paid the tax and died right afterwards, because if he lives another day or two, then he already starts to be chayav for the tax for the next year. And then there is an encumberment that already starts for the next year. Or, when the Gemara says he paid the tax, he paid this year's tax, and then he's not obligated to pay next year's tax. I mean, it hasn't come due yet. And until it's come due, there is no lien by the government. Right? You have to, depending on how you believe the dinam yechutz v'dinam works in terms of the encumberment here, whether day one, as soon as you start owing the next year's tax, there's an encumberment, or the obligation for taxation only happens at the end of the year when it comes due, or when the person comes to collect it, then that will depend on how much in advance, or how little in advance, you really need him to pay the tax before he dies. So now, Amar Rav Ashi, Amar Lehuna Bar Natan, Shotinu the Safrei de Rava. I went ahead and asked the Sofrim, right, of Rava, and they told me that the Locha is like Rav Huna de Rishua. So he went and asked those that are the documenters. Here the Safrei means those that wrote the Shtarot, right, for Rava. So he went ahead and he asked them, okay, so you write Shtarot. When you have Jews that are buying property from the tax collectors, when it was confiscated from another Jew because they did not pay the head tax, and they confiscated not just land, they confiscated other property, and then it's sold to a Jew, do you write a contract for that? So they said, yes, we write contracts for that. So if we write contracts for that, it proves that what? The Locha is like Rav Huna b'Reish Yeshua, that all of your possessions are mishubad, right, or encumbered to the tax. The Gemara says, velohi, it's not true. Hatam lekumei milsehu da'amai. They said that they had a vested interest in saying that. They were the purchasers of the property. The Safrei de Rava were the ones who were buying property like this. So they wanted the halacha to be like Rav Huna b'Reish Yeshua, so they could keep what they bought. So they said to, when Huna Bar Natan went and spoke to them, they said, yeah. We write contracts for that. Now, they were writing contracts for that, but they were writing contracts for their own benefit, because they were the ones purchasing the property, and therefore it wasn't necessarily under the auspices of Rava that the halacha was really like Rav Huna de Brave Yeshua, because they had a vested interest in saying such.
Maybe they had an interest in just there was a flame.
Yeah, that's what the main objection was.
They were writing contracts, so they had an interest in writing contracts.
In more contracts. Okay, so they had a personal. All right, that they wanted themselves to, that's very nice, so also that they wanted to engender more business, so they would have to write contracts, so they, again, said that the halacha is like him, so that there would be more sales, people would buy more property that was confiscated. All right, very good. All right, Amar Rav Ashi, Pradachat Misaye Mata, all right, I'll read this, and then we'll translate it again, Vahani Mile Da Atzilte Mata, Avandiske Siyata Dishmayehi. So now, if you have an individual, all right, that is a part of the community, but he does not necessarily do any work. He has no employment. He has no income. He doesn't. He's not involved in the Yishuvot Shel Olam, as the Rashbam says, that he's basically, you know, he's a loafer of some sort that doesn't really involve. Now, he has to pay taxes, or technically the city is part of a city, and now he has to go ahead and join or be a part of the city. The city is taxed. When the city is taxed, each individual in the city now owes or has obligations towards that taxation. Now, when we come to tax, there are two ways that one can tax. That's what it seems to be the way, at least the, we'll explain that the Rashbam is explaining over here, that the, if the individual who's coming along to class to collect the taxes, goes ahead and says, listen, they go ahead and they claim from each individual, taxation, and they take a fixed tax from every individual, and they come to this individual, has no money, has no work, doesn't do anything, and they say, look, you owe the tax. So then the people of the city say to the tax collector, listen, this guy doesn't really have any money, he has no income, he can't pay the taxes. So then the tax collector gives him some sort of discount, or he lets him go. But what's going to happen now? The obligation of the tax is going to fall where? On the other else. So they're going to end up taking on that obligation. So in that case, right, then the individual has to pay into the, right, pay into the tax pot. And he can't just say, listen, I have no money, I don't do anything, I don't have to pay anything. That he has to pay into the tax. Now, because why? The city is taking on his obligation. They are, right, shouldering the burden of his tax. They're saving him for the higher tax price. So he has to pay in that case. But that's when the Atzilta Demato. Aval Andiske, Siyata Dishmaya. What's an Andiske? So the way Rashbam explains it, Andiske, is that not that they put an obligation on the city. Right? Say, for instance, that the city has an obligation, and then the city's obligation devolves upon the different individuals in the city, and divided evenly upon all the individuals. Take a census, they have a population. The tax for the city is such and such. Now, you divide it amongst the population that's there. Rather, the case is that the city owes a tax, then the tax collector just starts heading from house to house. And he collects until he hits his goal. So whatever house he goes to first, he collects from, then the second house, then the third house, fourth house. So now, in that instance, if he does not, right, get the, pay the tax, in that instance, we don't obligate him to pay into the city coffers or to pay into the kahal. Why? Siyata d'shmayahu. He got lucky. They just happened to start somewhere else in the city, and they didn't reach him. And since they didn't reach him, or they skipped over him, or he said he didn't have money, so they left him alone. In that case, you don't go after him to pay into the taxes because, siyata d'shmayahu, because there's not a fixed obligation on everybody. And if someone doesn't pay, it doesn't go to the other people. The way they go is they go through the city, they assess how much you can pay, and they say, all right, pay it up until they hit their goal. So if they let this guy go, or they skipped over him, that's siyata d'shmayahu, he doesn't have to pay into the tax collection here. Sorry, the Rashbam explains it there. Rabbeinu Gershom explains it slightly different. He says on the top left, you can see in the Rabbeinu Gershom, Shetzilu b'nei ha'ir, divrei miyad asar. Okay, so they saved him from the people. Shem l'sar, in l'zeh klum, l'tein l'cha. Shem l'hen, he listens to them, and he chum al p'yam, and he tell al p'yam, and he's saved by their staying this. But chayav l'sayam. In that case, he has to be part of the city collections and help out with the city because the city itself provided him a tremendous benefit over here. Well, in diski, I know sara ir mi atzmo notein lo, that the discount was given to him by the minister or the ruler of the city. So it's about the Rashbam says that it was just lucky, right? But over here, it's that the dispensation, right, to allow him to avoid the tax payment, according to the first case, which is the atzite mato, is where the city put in a plea on his behalf, and then they listen, the Tsar listens. The other case is where he put his directly into the Tsar, and the Tsar listens to him, then he doesn't have to have any obligations to the city, because it wasn't the city that did anything for him, it was him and the Tsar, and that was the Siyata Dishmai that he listened in that case. Okay, now, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Hametzar v'chatzav, mafsikim b'nichsei ager. When it comes to, and we saw this earlier, in terms of making a chazaka nichsei ager, when you make a chazaka of the nichsei ager, you collect everything that was in the confines of your chazaka. So now, if he has two pieces of property, and then there's a divider, a meitzar, right, some sort of border between them, which is a fence or a ditch, or chatzav. Chatzav, if you remember from the Gemara in Bava Kamma, is the plant that they used to litchom et aretz. It was a plant used by Yoshua to divide up the land to show the borders because it's a deep-rooted plant that only roots straight down. So they use that to divide the properties. So if there's chatzav, or some sort of border between them, mafsikim v'nichsei ager. So if you take possession of one field of the ger, and there's some border, you do not get possession of the other field on the other side. You have to make separate chazakot in each of these fields. So some sort of divider in the fields divides the fields for your ability to create the chazakah mi'nichsei ager. Aval, Linyan peah v'tumah lo. When it comes to peah and tumah, that's not the case. Kiyat Ravin, I'm a Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi keeps saying the name Rabbi Yochanan. Afilo the peah v'tumah. The same din applies to peah and tumah. The Gemara wants to know what is peah and tumah. Peah mahi. What's the din of peah? Tetran. Elo mafsekin the peah. These are dividers when it comes to peah. Now, what does it mean peah? Each field you have to leave peah, a corner of the field. If it's a single field, you only have to leave one corner for the entirety of the field. If they are deemed to be two separate fields, then each field itself must leave a separate corner. I mean, quantitatively, it won't be right. It won't necessarily be different, but it just means that you have to leave separate corners in each of the fields rather than a single corner for the entireties of the fields. Now, what is considered a divider over here? Now, Nachal, you could have read Nachal to be simply a river. The way the Rashbam reads Nachal, he says Nachalitan. He reads it as a dried up riverbed, meaning that it's an area that's dried out. It's almost like a wadi that's in between them. That a dried up river where there's stones along the dry land there, that's considered to be a divider. It doesn't have to be a water way necessarily, or a river, a flowing river. Right? Vashalulit. The other.
I think like it's confused.
It's obvious that it's a secret. I assume that's why the Rashbam said that. And also the Gemara is going to mention other water issues like the Shalulit. So maybe that's what forced the Rashbam that way. Now, Shalulit, I know, the others, the other Rishonim say that a Nachal is just a Nachal, right? It's a river. And now, Shalulit is a puddle. If you remember, we have that in the Gemara and Shabbos, a number of places, but it's some sort of water collection. It's like a, call them an irrigation ditch of some sort, or a, I don't want to call it a cistern, because it's not a coated area, but it's a water puddle, right? If it is, means, right. So it's somewhere between that. The Rashi describes it as a waterway that's collecting, kvutzat mikshamim, right? It's a way that either a water collection area or it's a rain puddle, some sort of that divides. That will divide between the two properties. The Gemara and Shabbos deals with how deep it has to be in order for it to classify it as a shalulit and not be passable. The derech rabim, right? A derech rabim is something that is 16 amot wide, right? The derech hayachid is 4 amot wide. Now, obviously, if it's 16, if you have something that's 4 amot wide, why do you need something 16 amot wide? The Rashbam explains the whole Mishnah is lo zu av zu. The whole Mishnah says not only this, but this. So not only is the derech rabim a mafsik of 16 amot, so is the derech hayachid of 4 amot.
Right,
so that's what he's saying, lo zu av zu. It's a stylistic part of the Mishnah. Tosfos brings down the Yushalmi, which goes through each item, we'll do it in a second, and shows that there's a chiddush in each item. Right, so next is ushvila rabim. Shvila Rabim is that the Rabim walk there with their feet. It's a footpath, but not a path for, you know, karnot, for wagons and traffic. Other traffic, like animal traffic and wagon traffic, don't go through there. But foot traffic does go through there. That's a Shvila Rabim. And a Shvila Yachid. And a Shvila Yachid is where individuals use it as a path or a cut through. And in those cases, it says, but that ben bimot hachama, it's hakavua, meaning that it's fixed. Kavua, meaning that it's used all year round. Ben bimot hachama, ben bimot hakshamim, both in the summer and the winter season. The summer it's easy because the land is dry. And that's why people would cut through there. But if people during the bimot hakshamim don't cut through there because it's muddy, then that's not classified as a shvil. Because then it's only used part of the year. And that won't be considered a shvil to divide the property. So as we said, it's used all year round. Ben bimot hachama, ben bimot hakshamim, in order to be classified as a fixed shvil. Now, the Rashi will again explain that it's lo zu av zu. Because again, if you have shvil d'yachid, of course shvil d'rabim is a mafsik. So, Tzvi doesn't like the style of the Mishnah to be written that way, so we have the Tosfos for Tzvi, which is that the Yushalmi says that there is a kamash malon in all of these cases. And the kamash malon is the first one, which is that the Gemara says, Mishani mishum seifa naktina d'taniya kol mafsik l'zraim vein mafsik l'lanot. Everything divides for zraim. That's for, you know, vegetation and for grains, but not for trees. Trees are not divided by this. Ela geder. The only thing that can divide by trees is a fence. V'kamash v'lan, dafilu derech rabim lo mafsik li'ilan. That even a 16 amot wide, reshut rabim, is not mafsik for ilanot unless there's a geder. So that's the chiddush. The chiddush of derech rabim is not for the resha, which we read over here, but for the seifa, which says it does not apply to ilanot. It doesn't apply to ilanot, it's even a derech rabim is not a mafsik for ilanot. So that's the chiddush of derech rabim. If you look further in Tosfos, he walks through each item. He says that each one of them. Hashta itzrich lemitnei kulu. Now I'll tell you the chiddush of each one of them. Shvil de yachid leshmunon mafsik lizraim. Afagav debriya mikulu. Shvil de yachid, you have to write because that's the least of all the dividers over here. It's the smallest divider over here, and therefore you have to write it to tell you that that works to be a divider. Derech rabim So what about the Derech Rabim? Ashmina Dolo Mafsik Li'ilan. That was the one we said before. The Derech Rabim, which is the biggest of them, tells you that, forget about for Zra'im, but for Ilan, that doesn't work as a Mafsik. Now, Derech Yachid. What about Derech Yachid? Why do I need Derech Yachid? Over here, Ashmina Dolo Binan Kavua. But Derech Rabim and Derech Yachid, you don't need it be Motachama and Motach Shamim. That qualifier is only by Shvil. When it comes to Derech Rabim and Derech Yachid, those are drachim, even if they're not fixed or permanent types of roads, they're used all year round. Ushvil Rabim, Ashmina Dabin and Kavua. And Shvil Rabim comes to teach us that even though it's not the Shvil Yachid, it's Shvil Rabim, nevertheless, it has to be used all year round. Not only does a Shvil Yachid have to be used all year round, but even a Shvil Rabim has to be used all year round, and therefore you have a Chiddush in each item in the Mishnah now. Now the Gemara says, Tuma Mahi. What's the Din in Tuma? What's the Chiddush, or what's the Machlok is here that we have from Rabin in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that does, these are mafsikim for Tuma, whereas the Gemara, the Stam of the Gemara quoted Rav Asi in the name of Rabbi Yochanan says the Indian Pan Tuma, it's not. What's the Din in Tuma over here? So the Gemara says, Anichnas the Bik'abi Vgotav Shamim. Someone enters into a valley which has numerous fields in it in the time, what is this, in the winter time. With Tuma b'sadeh plonit. And there's Tuma in one of the sadot that's there. He says, I went in there. I have no clue if I entered that field or not. So Rabbi Lezer, mitaher, v'chumim, mitamim. Rabbi Lezer says he's tahor, chumim are mitame. Why? Rabbi Lezer omer, safek biya tahor, safek maga tum'a tame. When it comes to a safek of entering, you are tahor. When it comes to a safek of touching, then you are tame. All right? Now, the last line. I'm all right. You know what? We'll stop there.
What kind of tomb is this?
So there's a kever. There's a kever that's buried in this field. They don't know. They know where the kever is, but this guy entered the field. He has no idea if he entered the field where the kever is. That's all. He didn't know. The kever wasn't clearly marked. There was a. They know that someone is buried in one of this field, in a specific field. He says, I entered the bika. I have no idea if I entered that field in the bika. So is he tamei or not tamei? Machlokas tachar chachamim and Rabbi, it's probably Rabbi Elazar, the way the Tosfos is the gear, says Rabbi Elazar and the chachamim. This machlokas is actually a three-way machlokas about what their machlokas is. I'll tell you what the Rashbam says, then there's a Rashi and Tosfos. Rabbeinu Tam. Three different ways to learn the Gemara. The way that Rashbam explains it, says that there's a difference that Rabbi Elazar and the chachamim believe there's a difference here because it's a question if there's a sfeik sfeika or not. According to Rabbi Elazar, there's a sfeik sfeika here. Why? There is a safek bia, which is a safek whether you ever entered this field or not. And then there's a secondary safek, which is whether you actually came into contact, you went over that kever or not. Now, when is that true? And that's what the Rashbam says here. The Rashbam says that this whole din, that's when is that true? It's when each of the field is a distinct field. So if the fields are divided, then you could say safek bia, safek maga. Safek if I ever entered that field, safek if I ever went over the kever. That's only if the fields are distinct. But if there is no dividers in the Bika, then it's all one field. Right, so there's only one Safek then. So that's the din of Tumah here replies to Rabbi Elazar, and that's a Safek Safek. The Rabbanan says it's all one Safek here. The Safek, even when the fields are divided, it's the same Safek. Did you go there or did you not go there? That's one Safek. That's what the Rashbam claims. The Rashbam claims that Rabbi Elazar believes it's a Safek Safek because you have Bia and Mago. That makes it him Tahor. Because Safek Safek, right, makes you Tahor. Safek, Tamei, Bishuta Yachid, we know Safek Tuma Bishuta Yachid is Tamei. So the Chachamim believe there's only one Safek here, and therefore you are Tamei. And the Gemara's question, the Gemara's statement here is all about Rabbi Elazar. When is it applied to Tumah? Rabbi Elazar, if it's distinct fields, then you have a Safek Safeka. That's the way the Rashbam learns it. Rashi, right, in Avodah Zarah says no. That the Machlokas here is about the Din of Sota. Din of Sota is that how do we learn out that Safek Tuma Bishuta Ravim is Tahor? Safek Tuma B'Shuta Yachid is Tamei. We learn that out from Sota. Because Sota is the one where we know that we have Safek. Whether the woman, we know the woman was Nistara. It's a Safek whether she was Nitma'a or not. Right, so there, the Gemara says, what? If she's Nistara, where was she Nistara? B'Shuta Yachid. Right, so over there, the Gemara says that there was Safek of the woman, right, when there's Kinoi in Stira, makes it that she has to now bring a Karban, or she has to deal with the whole situation. So we say, Safek Tum'a B'Shuta Yachid is Tamei. And that we learn out from Sota. Now, when we learn that out from Sota, Sota is only a Safek Maga, a Safek No Maga. It's not a Safek Bia over there. We know she was Nistara. That's the whole problem. She was Nistara with the individual. We know that she was there. So that's what Rabbi Elazar believes. Rabbi Elazar says, if we learn it out from Sota, Sota is a chiddush that teaches us that safek tumah b'shuta yachid is tameh. But where does Sota apply? Sota applies to safek maga, not to safek bia. So that's where Rashi learns. Rabbi Elazar says, Sota is not applicable over here. True, by safek tumah b'shut yachid, when it comes to safek maga, that's like sota. So there you'll be tamei. When you're talking about safek bi'ah, entering the land, we know the woman entered that space. That's not the safek that sota dealt with. And therefore, that's not encompassed by the din of sota. If it's not encompassed by the din of sota, then they can't make it tamei, even when it's a safek b'shut yachid. Now, the achamim say, no, that it's only one suffix. It's suffix tumah b'shus yachid. Suffix tumah b'shus yachid. You're always going to be tameh. Doesn't matter how that suffix comes about. That's the principle of sota. The principle of sota is not suffix maga. It's suffix tumah b'shus yachid. So it really depends on how you define sota. If you define sota as suffix maga, that's what Rabbi Elazar does, then that's the only thing that'll be tameh b'shus yachid. As according to Chamim, say it's suffix tumah b'shus yachid. Suffix tumah, doesn't matter how you came about to the suffix, whether it's bi'ar maga, that will make you tameh b'shus yachid. That's Rashi's interpretation. The Rabbeinu Tam rejects both of these. And says, the Rabbeinu Tam brings a third position over here. He says, Rabbeinu Tam says, Mefarish to Pliga Rabbanan, Mitam O, Afilu Bekama Sfeikot. That the Rabbanan are Mitamei, even if you have multiple. Even if you have a Sfeik Sfeika, the Rabbanan are going to say you're Tamei and Rishut Yachid. Why? So again, because where do we learn it from? We learn it from Sultan. And that's what the Tosa. Mishom de Minadin, Afilu Bekada Sfeika Tahor. The Minadin, when it comes to Sfeik Tuma, you should have been Tahor. The Ukma Chazke. Put a person in a chazakah. The chazakah is that he's tahor. So why should he become tameh over here for safek? So why is a person safek? Why is a person who's in the safek betumah b'shut yachid? Why is he tameh from sota? We alfinan mi sota de tameh. That's where we learn it from. So if that's the case, imkay mali chad sfeka mali trei sfeke. If the sota comes to teach you that here the regular din of safek does not apply, that means that who cares how many sfekot there are anymore? The regular din doesn't apply. That's exactly what sota teaches you. If it was a regular din of safek, you should have been tahor up front. The chiddush of sota is that the regular din of sfeka don't apply. If the regular din of sfeka don't apply, that means safek doesn't apply, sfeka doesn't apply, nothing applies over here. So that's the case. That's why the chachamim say you are tameh. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar says, you only get the chiddush. What's the chiddush of sota? The chiddush of sota is one safek is tameh. Doesn't come and teach you about all sfeikot. And that's machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Chachamim here. How far does the chiddush of sota apply? Does the chiddush of sota come and teach you that all sfeikot are tameh? Or does it teach you one sfeik is tameh, but you have the regular dinim after that? Sfeik sfeika will be tahor. So everybody agrees that there's a sfeik sfeika over here. The only question is sfeik sfeika in Rishut HaYachid tameh or tahor? That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it. So here we have three different explanations of what the machlokes of Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim are about. But again, the position of Rabbi Elazar is premised on the fact that you have division of fields. If you have division of fields, then you have safek bia. Why does safek bia make you tahor? According to the Rashbam, it's because it's a safek sfeika. It's according to the Chachamim, who think it's only a safek here. Rashi, who thinks that that's not encompassed in sota, because sota is safek maga, not safek bia, that's why you're tahor here. According to Rabbeinu Tam, everybody thinks there's a safek sfeika. It's just a question whether you think sota covered safek sfeika or not. Right now, the Gemara says, Abal de Shabbat lo. When it comes to Shabbos, these aren't considered separate rishuyot. Now, when you have these dividers between the fields, these types of divisions, they are not separate rishuyot. Rav Amar afilu l'inyan Shabbos. Rav says, even for Shabbos, these are considered separate entities. Why does it matter if the fields are separate on Shabbos? The Tanya, we have a brisa. Otzi chatzi grogoris to Rishut Rabim. Someone takes out a chatzi grogoris to Rishut Rabim. Ve'nicha, and he leaves it there. V'chazar. Ve'otzi chatzi grogoris, and then he goes and takes out another half grogoris. So a grogoris is a dried fig. And that's the standard that the Gemara uses in Shabbos for the minimum of food that you need to carry in order to be chayav for hutzah on Shabbos. Other foods, particular foods, have specific shiurim, but the standard shiur for all foods is a grogoris. So here you took out half a grogoris, second half a grogoris, and then you now have had a full shiur of hutzah. Right? So by halem echad, you do that with one forgetting. I mean, you forgot it was Shabbos, and you did it in one shot when you forgot it. Chayav. Why? Because the din in Shabbos is, as long as you're in the same forgetting, it's all considered to be one action. B'shnei alamot, if you forgot, then remembered it was Shabbos, then carried out a natzi chatzi grogoris, those two are not mitzareif, and therefore you're patur from a karban. In that case, because you have now two separate actions that cannot be combined. If there are two separate actions that can be combined, you don't have a shiur to force you to bring a karban. Only if you do it behalem echad. Now, Rabbi Yossi has the unusual position, that's what the Gemara is after here, is Rabbi Yossi omer behalem echad, b'shut echad chayav, b'shtei rishuyot patur. Rabbi Yossi further qualifies the statement here and says that it's only true if it's in one rishut. Even the halem echad, even if it's one forgetting, for it to be mitzareif over here, to be a single shiur, not only does it have to be one forgetting, meaning that it's one single action under the coverage of a single forgetting, that also has to go out, or at least the way they're asking this is when it has to go out to a single rishut. The Chazik Ruos has to be taken from here to one Rishut, and then the second one taken to that same Rishut. So that's what the Gemara is after here. The Shabbos, it's Shtei Rishuyot. What does it mean, Shtei Rishuyot? If a person gets a Chazik Ruos into one field, Chazik Ruos in the other field in the Bika, right? Is it a divider for Shabbos or not? If it's a divider, then according to Rabbi Yossi, you've taken it to two separate places, they will not be Mitztaref. If you think it's not a divider for Shabbos, and you took it into the Bika, it's all one area. If it's one area, then you'll be Chayav on Shabbos. So that's the way the Rashbam and others interpret the Gemara here. That Rabbi Yossi's statement is about the destination. That there are two Rishuyot that you take it into, that's when you are Chayav. Now, the Rabbeinu Chananel challenges that position of Rabbi Yossi. He says, because I have a din of katav at otachat bitveria, otachat bitzipori. Person writes one letter in Tveria and one letter in Tzipori in two different cities. What's the din in k'tiva to be chayav and Shabbat? To be chayav and Shabbat for k'tiva, you have to write shtei otiot, two letters. So the Gemara over there says you are chayav. When you write one letter in this city, one letter in another city, why? Because they're just mechusar kreva. You can take the letter from here, put it together on the other side, and then you'll be chayav. Meaning that two otiot, what you're chayav for Shabbos is writing two otiot. Now, you wrote two otiot. Two, they're not right next to each other, but you can bring them. They could be brought next to each other, and they would work. So, I mean, again, if it's impossible to bring them together, right? Right. If it's impossible to bring them together, then, right, then it wouldn't work that way. Right. All right. The Gemara is using, right, theoretical. distances over here, but just to explain, right, the idea that it's not, that you have to write two otiyot right there on the spot. Now, so why over here, so that's the Rabbeinu Chananel's question, why do you say the same thing over here? Why don't we say when it goes to the destination of the two rishuyot, why over here is it not considered just mechuzar kreva? Look at that, this rishut, look at that rishut, you could just bring the two chatzik rugeris together and then you've carried out a whole rugeris. So why does the Gemara over here say by ketiva say it's mechuzar kreva, and that's fine, and you chayav, why does it not say over here? So because of that, the Rabbeinu Chananel says no. When it says Shtei Rishuyot over here, according to Rabbi Yossi, means that he took it out of two Rishuyot. Not that he took it into one. He takes it into one Rishut on the other side, but he took it out of Shtei Rishuyot. So he had two different Rishuyot on this side. The starting point was two Rishuyot, and then he went to single point not to avoid this problem. Right now, the Re says that he thinks that Rabbeinu Chananel's question is not a good question. Why? Because you're dealing with two different Melachot. Two different Mechalochot. He says, I'll read you what he says. It's the last line in the Tosis you want to see on the daf. It says, the Shem Malacha is called writing. When is writing done? When you write two letters. If they're distance away. The Malacha is called Akotev Shtei Otiot. Akotev Shtei Otiot you do, no matter how far apart the Otiot are. The Malacha here is taking something out. Hotza'ah means to carry an object to a single location on the other side. If you carry it to two locations, true, it's just mechusar kreva, but it's also mechusar hotza'ah. There is no hotza'ah. The melacha, what's the definition of the melacha? The definition of melacha is carrying an item from here to there. Here to there, according to Rabbi Yossi, means to a single rishus. So if you carry it to two rishuyot, you haven't even done hotza'ah. Forget about mechusar kreva, you haven't done even the melacha of hotza'ah, because the melacha of hotza'ah is take an object from here to there, single location to single location. That's what Rabbi Yossi says. The malach of tiva is just writing two letters. Now we come up with a case where two letters are in two different places. You've still written two letters. You've done the malacha. You just mechusar some sort of distance between them. And that's an ikar. The truth is that in other places, that I know Rav Soloveitchik says in other places that it actually works the other way. That sometimes chatzi shi'ur, right? And here the Gemara is using it by Otza, but chatzi shi'ur, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish Machlokas Gemara in the last parak in Yoma, the chatzi shi'ur is chayab or not. So now, when it comes to Mesurim Melachos HaShabbos, right, is there Chatzi? We ask about Chatzi Shur or not Chatzi Shur. So the Rebbe, I think, pointed out, by Ketiva, if you wrote one letter, is there a din of Chatzi Shur? So here, the Rebbe said it many times, that there's no such thing as Chatzi Shur by Ketiva. Why? Because the definition of the Melacha is Kotev Shtei Otiot. If you write a one letter, you have Chatzi Melacha, you don't even have Chatzi Shur. Chatzi Melacha means that there is no Melacha over here. There is no malacha. Writing a single letter is not a chatzi shiur. It's not classified as ktiva. It's lacking in ktiva. So that's what the Ri is doing, a similar type of definition here with when it comes to hotza'ah. Over here, by ktiva, you wrote two otiot, you've done the malacha. So once you've done the malacha, mechusar kreva you can deal with. Over here, by tzah. Right. So here, the malacha is doing the hotza'ah. If the hotza'ah means the definition of taking from single point to single point, you don't have a chatzi shiur, you have a chatzi malacha. A chatzi malacha you can never be mitzdaref to make into a single malacha. A chatzi shiur, you can be a mitzdarif. But a chatzi melacha, there is no way to bring a chatzi melacha together to make it into a full melacha. Okay, we'll stop over here.